You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I found a bunch of people who were sharing like audio files and stuff like that on like Tumblr. And I was like, oh, okay, why don't I check it out? It seems like something a lot of my mutuals are into. And the first song I actually heard was Babushka. And I was like, at first I was just so shook. It was unlike anything I've really ever heard before. And then I just kept coming back to it because it was just so unique. And it just kind of, it grew from there. So Babushka is one of those songs for me that are just like, it's powerful.
Well, the thing about Babushka that makes it so interesting, and it's not necessarily specifically unique to the song. It's something that she does here and there across all of her albums, her entire catalog. But with Babushka, I find it particularly well developed. It's an entire narrative in 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's got this great piano beat laid down as the foundation of the whole thing. And which I really love. I'm not really that much of a music critic. I don't know how to tell you what chord she's playing here, or what chord she's playing there, or how she's going wild with the composition or anything like that. But I know what I like, and I know I like this.
Babushka.
How I came to write it. Yes, it was really a theme that's fascinated me for some time. It's really based on a theme that's used a lot in folk songs, which is where the wife of the husband begins to feel that perhaps he's not faithful. And there's no real strength in her feelings. It's just more or less paranoia, suspicions. And so she starts thinking that she's going to test him to see if he's faithful. So what she does is she gets herself a pseudonym, which happens to be Babushka, and she sends him a letter. And he responds very well to the letter because as he reads it, he recognises the wife that he had a couple of years ago who was happy in the letter, and so he likes it. And she decides to take him even further and get a meeting together to see how he reacts to this Babushka lady instead of her. And when he meets her, again, because she's so similar to his wife, the one that he loves, he's very attracted to her. And, of course, she's very annoyed, and the break in the song is really her just throwing the restaurant at him. So there's, like, cutlery, vases.
Because he actually is unfaithful.
Going straight across the room. No, he's not. He's not. He loves her very much. And the whole idea of the song is really the futility and the stupidness of humans, and how by our own thinking and swilling around in our own ideas, we come up with completely paranoid facts. So in her situation, she was in fact suspicious of a man who was doing nothing wrong. He loved her very much indeed. And through her own sort of suspicions and evil thoughts, she's really ruined the relationship.
Babushka's a Russian word though, isn't it?
Yes, it is. In context of the song, though, I just popped the name in because it felt right. And I presume that I picked the name up from a fairy story or something when I was a kid. But in fact, it is a Russian word for grandmother. Oh. Something I didn't realise at the time. It just felt like a really good name for the lady.
Welcome to the first song episode of the third season of Strange Phenomena. I'm so excited to be talking about this album with you guys, and especially talking with all these different fans. Speaking of different fans, so for this first song episode, which is going to be all about the album opener, Babushka, we are going to get to hear from three different fans. Count them, three different fans. I haven't had this happen since the In Search of Peter Pan episode last season. We're going to get to hear from Elizabeth Ann, who is a longtime Kate fan from Western Pennsylvania. Then there's Vanessa Ramos from Toronto and Freezing Inferno from Newfoundland. When I put out a call on Facebook asking for people to talk about songs from Never Forever, within an hour, I heard from each of these three folks, and I said, okay, we're going to do an episode with all three of you guys. Let's do it. And I think you'll be really excited with what we got to talk about. We dug into the history of the song. We looked at the lyrics and the complex but seemingly simple story that Kate is telling. We talked about, of course, the video, because how can you talk about Babushka and not talk about the video? But first, we're going to get to hear how each of these people came to Kate's music, starting with Elizabeth Ann. You're another American fan, I can tell. Mm-hmm. You've been talking. We said you were from Western Pennsylvania.
Yes.
So how long have you been a Kate fan?
Oh, man. It goes back quite a ways. All I can say is my dad raised me right. I think the first time I got turned on to Hounds of Love, I think, when I was like 9 years old. So we're talking like 15 years, you know, it's been a good long haul. And then a few years later, I saw the single file, the collection of videos, and that was it. I was in love. I just, you know, so I've got a good 20-year love affair with Kate.
Now, you said you listened to Kate's music kind of early on?
Yeah.
You're saying from your dad?
Yeah, he played everything. I mean, I learned a lot from him, but my earliest memories of Kate are from when I was about 9, so that would have been in the 90s. Let's say 93 would have been about the time I got turned on for, right around the time The Red Shoes was coming out, as a matter of fact. But my introduction was Hounds of Love. My dad turned me on to the concept album, you know, and we were listening mm-hmm. to things sort of like that in the second. The Ninth Wave was just mind-boggling.
Now, how did your dad hear about her? Like, was he just into more like the indie scene and that's why he would have heard of her here? Or did he spend some time in Europe? Because I know she's bigger over...
She's huge, you know, over
places
there.
Than here. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, my dad, he's always been a serious rock aficionado. I mean, This man is a walking rock encyclopedia. You can ask him anything about any band and he probably knows the answer. And in the 70s and 80s, he lived in New York and he had some brief stints in radio. And I know that he got, you know, he turned on her... kind of through that, and the British invasion was such a major, major thing for my dad. I mean, the Beatles run in his actual blood, and you know, mm-hmm. so he listened to just whatever he could get out of Europe and England, and especially England. And I mean, the British progressive rock scene is a very comfortable place for him. So bands like Illusion, Renaissance, all very familiar in our household growing up.
Awesome. So it's no wonder.
Yeah, I guess I should just really feel lucky.
Yeah, so it's no wonder he would have heard of Kate Bush then, because she's kind of like verged on the prog sort of thing.
Yeah, sort of towed that line. So, you know, with his intense love for Renaissance and Genesis and, you know, Peter Gabriel, how can you not come across
Of course. And now we'll get to hear from Vanessa Ramos, a fan from Toronto, who I got to talk with about Babushka. She and I met on Twitter, and, well, the internet is kind of how she heard about Kate Bush.
Hi, I'm Vanessa, and I'm just really happy to be here today. Thank you.
I know, it's always great to talk with another Kate fan. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, it's wonderful. It really is.
And another Canadian, too. I've talked with a lot of Canadian Kate fans, actually.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of us.
So how did you come across Kate's music? How did you become a fan? I'm always interested to find out how people hear of her, because it sounds like you're a young fan like me.
I am, yes. I'm 17 years old. I came across Kate Bush when I was on Tumblr around, like, beginning of ninth grade. And I stumbled upon a lot of people who were really excited for the Before the Dawn tour. And I found a bunch of people who were sharing, like, audio files and stuff like that on, like, Tumblr, and I was like, oh, okay, why don't I check it out? It seems like something a lot of my mutuals are into. And the first song I actually heard was Babushka, and I was like, at first I was just so shook. It was unlike anything I've really ever heard before. And then I just kept coming back to it because it was just so unique. And it just kind of, it grew from there. So Babushka is one of those songs for me that are just like, it's like, it's really just powerful.
And now here is what Freezing Inferno, my other Canadian fan I got to talk to, how he discovered Kate's music as well.
Hi, I'm Freezing Inferno on the internet, but you may know me as a bunch of other names, but for now you can call me Jerry, I suppose. Works.
And I understand you're from Newfoundland, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yay! So you're an hour and a half ahead of me here on the East Coast.
Yes, all of your podcast listeners are wondering how the hell can that be? And the answer is that this is a very strange place.
So how did you become a Kate Bush fan?
I got linked a bunch of songs by a pal of mine whose music tastes I respect. And she basically sent me The Dreaming, and I put that on, and what in the world was I even hearing? So just imagine having no experience with Kate Bush, and all of a sudden you're just sitting here listening to Set in Your Lap, and what in the world? So that's something. And, I went through all the other albums, and we're going to talk about the song that really stuck with me today.
So how did you... how'd you come across Babushka, and what makes it one of your favorite Kate songs?
Well, I picked it up along with Never Forever, just going through, and it really struck me. What I really love about it in context with all the other albums is how it's sort of an in-between. A lot of Kate Bush fans, if you ask them, what's your favorite album, they'll go with Hounds of Love, which, well, you really can't fault for that. I'm not going to shame that or anything, but what my favorite is the first one I heard, The Dreaming, which is just totally out there and wild. In that same vein. And then you have early career with Kick Inside and Lionheart, and Never Forever is just this liminal space right between the two. Like, it's not quite Gonzo Kate, and it's not quite early Kate. It's just right there in the middle, this transitional period. And it's really special to me for that reason, just because it's got a foot in both worlds, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love the album for that. And Babushka is one hell of an opener.
Oh, yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's got this great piano beat laid down as the foundation of the whole thing. And which I really love. I'm not really that much of a music critic. I don't know how to tell you what chord she's playing here or what chord she's playing there or how she's going wild with the composition or anything like that. But I know what I like, and I know I like this.
So as Kate fans know, Babushka is not just an album opener, but it was a single as well. It was the second single released from Never Forever, and it did well everywhere it was released, especially in Europe and Australia. With Vanessa, we got to talk about not just how well this song did commercially, but also who played on the song and a really cool instrument used in this song. Check it out. Babushka, I know for me, stood out when I first listened to it. I first heard it on The Whole Story, actually. That was kind of my first exposure to other things from Kate. And yeah, this is so catchy. It is no wonder it was a huge hit.
It is really catchy. And it was a hit in a lot of places in Europe. I was looking this up. I got some stats.
Cool, me too.
Let's compare
our stats here.
I have my stats up right now. I managed to find a 2008 edition of Infodisc's best-selling singles of all time, but it was the 465th best-selling single of all time, selling over 547,000 copies. So, Give it up for Kate.
Indeed. Yeah, it went to number 5 in the UK, where it spent 10 weeks on the charts. Went to number 2 in Australia. You're mentioning, you know, like the whatever number for best-selling single of all time. In Australia, it was the 20th best-selling single of the year,
which is impressive. Exactly on my paper, but yeah, that's really great.
It went to number 24 in the Netherlands, number 4 in France, number 14 in Germany, number 5 in Israel, Italy, and Ireland, number 8 in New Zealand, number 4 in Norway, and even number 12 in South Africa. So there you go. But did not chart in the U.S. because we're not
or cool, Canada.
Or Canada, too. Like, what?
I know. But the album charted in Canada, so it's okay.
Yeah, it did, too, here for the U.S., but... so it did extremely well. And of course, the B-side, are you familiar with the B-side from Babushka?
Yeah, it's really kind of kooky. I love it.
I know. And it's funny that she chose, I think, Rantan Waltz as the B-side because it's another one of those songs that's told from the point of view of a dude talking about a relationship, and it's sympathetic toward the guy, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
And yeah, the broken glass is the Fairlight. So they did a sampling of that, and that leads into Delius. Wonderful use of the Fairlight. It's just I love how it sounds.
I know. While I was doing some research for this, I looked up like on SongFacts, and I think it was, and it was like they tried various times to break the glass in the correct way to get the noises, and I'm like, no, they didn't. But okay.
Yeah, I'd heard a similar thing, too. Like, they went into the canteen there at the studio and just started breaking stuff because they realized, oh, wait, if we record this, we could turn it into a musical instrument. So cool.
No, they just got that Fairlight going for them, and they're like, yeah, let's just sample a few things.
I know. It's funny to think of Fairlight stuff because when I do my own music stuff, sometimes I'll sample different sounds and turn them into musical instruments, and it's really easy to do now, but back then you had the Fairlight, this kind of primitive, huge, honking thing.
Oh, yeah. That's so funny to me. That one photo of Kate where she's just by the Fairlight is just really great.
Yeah.
I've used that a few times for, like, just shit posting.
I actually still have that kind of picture. I'm looking at my phone now. It's the wallpaper on my phone.
That's
Kate
wonderful.
Just, like, playing on the Fairlight. Oh, hi, with my new toy. Oh, hi.
Hello.
Yeah, you got the Fairlight. Her brother played, he did the backing vocals, and he played a really cool instrument. He played the balalaika.
That's a really interesting instrument.
Yeah, it's like it's a triangular Russian guitar. And I would love to actually learn how to play it, but you can never find anyone like around here because it just like looks really cool.
It's one of those instruments that looks and like kind of sounds really interesting, and it's like it's just you can't find it anywhere because it's so obscure.
Or the cover of the single, she's lying on the floor with her right hand stretched out toward a piece of paper with babushka written on it, and her left hand holding a steak going through a piece of paper next to her, where it looks like she's kind of. I guess acting out a little bit of the theme of the song.
Yeah.
Just, it's Kate being Kate.
Yeah.
Now we get to talk about the story and the theme of the song. We got to talk about that a lot with Elizabeth Ann. She has some great insights into the theme of the song, and also she gets to talk a little bit about why this is such an important song for her.
Well, the thing about Babushka that makes it so interesting, and it's not necessarily specifically unique to the song. It's something that she does here and there across all of her albums, her entire catalog, but with Babushka, I find it particularly well developed. It's an entire narrative in 3 minutes and 20 seconds. And it's not just a narrative. It's got some very strong literary techniques. I mean, she's got plot. She's got very deeply developed, complex characters. And she uses situational irony in such a masterful way. You know, it's like a classic story. And she does it in a 3-minute and 20-second song. And that just floors me every single time. Yeah, it's really incredible in that way, and particularly on the situational irony piece, you know, that the literary definition is when the audience knows something that the characters don't. And we know things that both characters don't. You know, we know, for example, that, you know, the wife is testing her husband in this way by creating this third character and trying to trick him into infidelity. And we know from the husband's point of view that he misses his wife and falls for this babushka character because he reminds her of his wife. She reminds him of his wife, and it's all he wants is to connect with her. So we know things about them that they don't know about each other, and it just creates this level of engagement that is unique and really arresting.
Mm-hmm. And very interesting for something that was marketed to be a mainstream pop song, you know?
Definitely. It's something that, and it's interesting because the characters are relatable. The theme is so universal. I mean, anybody in the world who has experienced a long-term relationship and seen how complicated things can get can relate to these characters, and neither of them handle it particularly well. And they're not, you can relate to them, but they're not very sympathetic, you know, and it's difficult to connect with them, but yet so easy to relate. And that's such a complex scenario, like you said, for like a pop song, you know, it's so complicated and yet so easy to just connect to.
Indeed. And what I find it's especially intriguing about the song, kind of like you were saying, I agree with the unsympathetic characters. Like, these are not necessarily people who are perfect. Right. But also I find it interesting that she seems to side a little bit with the husband, in that the wife was trying to orchestrate this whole big dog and pony show. Mm-hmm. And she willingly went into this and she screwed it up. It's her fault.
Right. And it's easier, if you're going to sympathize with anybody, it's easier to sympathize with a husband, because, you know, Kate presents his yearning for a connection with the woman he fell in love with. But at the same time, you know, he does willingly engage in infidelity rather than, I don't know, talk to his wife. And Kate, you know, I think she relies on her listeners to recognize that as well, because she doesn't hide it. You know, she doesn't sugarcoat his actions either. She does, however, I agree, tend to make it a little easier to sympathize with him if you're going to sympathize with anybody.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that the B-side for this single was Rantan Waltz, which is another one of those like fracture relationship sort of songs, but it's sympathizing with the guy, just like this song is. I wonder if she did that on purpose, like, because these are like sympathizing with the guy songs.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, one thing we know about Kate is that she loves a strong fugue, you know, a strong theme. And, you know, she's very good at piecing these sorts of things together in sometimes very subtle ways and sometimes not so subtle.
Now we'll get to hear from Vanessa talking about the theme of the song and what it means to her.
The theme of the song to me is just really interesting. It's one of those Kate songs that it's like, it's just the theme is so unique, and it's like you won't see something like that ever again in pop music, I don't think. She was just so unafraid to just try being different people through her music. It's like it's got this kind of fearless attribute to her music, because she's just so, like, you can just listen to a Kate song and you can just think, oh my god, that is so, like, that's so out there. And then you can listen to another one and you're like, that's so out there, but in a completely different way.
No, the theme of this song is, I mean, it's very catchy, but then when you really get into what it's about, like, so what do you have for what it's about? I mean, okay. it's got a pretty obvious meaning, but, you know, what do you guys say about what it's about?
So my take is that this is the original catfishing. She writes about a woman who is so afraid that her husband is having an affair with other women or a younger woman than her, that she poses as a younger woman and sends her husband letters pretending to be this younger woman in order to see if he will sort of initiate the affair. When she meets with him, it's just, you can sort of sense the tension in the music itself. Just, it kind of like gets your heart pumping, because you're kind of like, you're afraid that she's going to get caught, and also you're afraid Babushka, because she kind of knows that her husband's kind of sort of cheating on her now.
And then at the very end, it all just falls apart.
Yeah.
He realizes that it's her.
I know. Oh my God.
And it's really cool that there's the breaking glass at the end.
Yeah, I was like just about symbolism. To say that.
Yeah.
The symbolism like that it's all come crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Just wow.
This relationship that they'd had for years and years just falls apart because she decided to test her husband's fidelity and she
failed.
Now here's what Freezing Inferno had to say about how he interprets that famous broken glass sound.
Well, another thing I remembered, mm-hmm. We're talking about the story of the song, the whole shattering glass thing. I don't know where I read this from or whatnot, but that's supposed to be the wife in a fit of rage, smashing shit everywhere where they're meeting. So it's just the angriest room trashing ever set to synth glass shattering sounds run through an 80s computer, and I love it.
Elizabeth Ann had some further thoughts about the theme of the song.
There, if there's an element of sympathy for the wife, it's that she just, you know, you ask yourself as you listen to this song, you know, he feels that she's cold. She clearly feels that he's distant because she's reaching out and putting on this incredible, you know, pageant to catch his attention. You know, and to what extent is his distance the reason for her coldness? And to what extent is her coldness the reason for his distance? And, you know, you sympathize with them both on a human level. Just thinking like, you know, this sort of thing happens and it's sad and it's so easy to see from the outside, but they're in it and they can't see the forest for the trees. And it's on that level, they're the same, you know, they're suffering the same way.
And the whole thing, she's telling a really cool story. I mean, she's good with telling stories, and it's not just that she's telling a story, which is unusual for a pop song, but also that she's clearly inspired more than ever, I think, by just folk music.
Yeah.
Like the fact that she's got these twists and turns and these characters who aren't exactly sympathetic. Like you don't really find that outside of folk music, you know?
Excuse me. Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, Kate, for all of the exciting production and all of the different sorts of things that she tries, excuse me,
from one album to
just had a swallowed a bit of air the wrong way, but
I know.
From one album to another, you know, she takes these great leaps, and you know, she just develops as an artist every step of the way, and you know, you wind up with this concept album like Hounds of Love or Ariel. Throughout all of that, there's always that thread of human folk music. You know, you can always find it, no matter what she's doing, and you know, that strong characterization is just always a piece of what she's doing.
And one of her big themes, and I think that especially comes up in this song, is communication between men and women.
Oh yeah.
Like you kind of think that, okay, maybe if these people had a better relationship with each other, if they knew each other better, if they could just talk to each other, then that would solve everything. But then again, that would be like every other romantic comedy could be solved
in
5 minutes if they would just sit down and tell each other what they want.
Exactly. The Hallmark Channel would go right out of business.
Oh, seriously.
Bridget Jones never would have had a problem. It just would have been. Yeah, it's such a human issue. And, you know, life imitates art. Art imitates life. And the fact is, this really happens to real people all the mm-hmm. time. You know, it's funny that this is coming up now because, you know, I've been married for 6 years, which doesn't seem like that long, but things can get crazy in 6 years. And, you know, you work in and, you know, children and all of these things. And at the end of the day, sometimes my husband and I are tearing our hair out going like, why can't you just listen to me? And why can't we just talk? And it's, you know, it's hard to judge characters in a song like Babushka because this is life. It's just, mm-hmm. it's so common to everyday life.
Well, and I've been married for eight. I've been married for, actually, we're almost on 8 years, my husband and I. So,
so you can relate, I imagine.
A little bit, yes, I can. But also, like, it's a little different because with my husband and I, we're very close with each other, and I can actually see, like, and you know, you mentioned it. It's funny, you coming up now for you that I can see in some of my other friends who are married that sometimes it feels like if they could just talk to each other and maybe that would help things out. But and Andrew and I will kind of like look at each other like, you know, why don't you just tell him or her what you really want?
Yeah.
But most of our friends and their married relationships, like, they don't do that. They're not close with each other like my husband and I are.
Yeah, and it's funny too because my husband and I started out as such good friends and became so close, and you know, our relationship developed and we decided to get married, and it was the best decision of our lives, and it's been wonderful. But sometimes, even in such a close relationship, somehow you just lose touch. You just lose touch with each other, and it can be so hard to find that again. And you know, it's so complex, and communication can be so, what's the right word? Intense and riddled with obstacles and pitfalls. And you know, but at the heart of it, it's like just talk. Just it's okay to feel safe. It's okay to trust each other. That's what you're doing here, isn't it? And you know, but somehow, you know, you find yourself just in the weeds. And I feel like with these characters, they're so deep in the weeds that there's just seemingly for them no way out. But really, there is, you know, just talk.
I think another thing that really makes this unique is that the characters are very flawed.
Yeah, both of them.
The woman is paranoid and thinks that her husband doesn't love her anymore. And the husband just is kind of like doesn't really seem to notice her much anymore and seems to be easily duped.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like these people are not perfect. And I like that about this song. I like that these are not perfect people. And in a lot of like your top charting songs, if there's any kind of song, it's like, you did me wrong, you did this, you did that.
Yeah.
There's no sense of self-awareness that, oh, wait a minute, I could have done things differently, or I should have done a blah, 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 blah. You know?
Yeah. And it's like, certainly, like, you can see definitely, like, both the characters sort of have these regrets. Babushka, certainly, that she sort of did this to her husband. And then, of course, the husband for, you know, doing this to Babushka. It's just such an interesting thing. I can't really talk about it because it's like, he feels bad for doing this, but also he did it. And it's like, okay, that what I just said made no real sense. But he only sort of feels bad because it was Babushka that kind of was the other woman, if that makes sense.
So we were kind of like digging in the lyrics with the like the characters and everything. Like, what are some of your favorite lyrics in this song? Because I can tell you, like, for me, honestly, it's pretty much everything she put out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's no two ways about it. Kate can literally do no wrong. But you know, I was just listening to it before we talked, and what really stands out is when she says, it's uncanny how she reminds him of his little lady, the capacity to give him all he needs, just like his wife, before she frees. It's so powerful because what he's literally thinking is that this woman, this Babushka character, has the capacity to give me everything, just like my wife. And it's like, you know it. You know where to look to get everything you need. You know where to go to ask for it, but you feel like you can't. And when he laid eyes on her, he got the feeling they had met before. Uncanny how she reminds him of his little lady. Capacity to give him all he needs, just like his wife before she frees down him.
Yeah, there's just like some sort of mental barrier. You're just like, nope, I can't go over there. Nope.
Exactly. I'm looking for it. I want it. I know you got it. And this person seems to have it too, so I guess I'll check over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, it's so powerful. And I think that is exactly the line that makes it so easy to sympathize with him, because in his mind, he blames her. She froze on me. you know, and it, to what extent is the fact that his wife knows that he's, you know, distant and willing to look elsewhere, you know, to what extent is the impetus for her sort of getting chilly? And I'm sure that there's just a lot of blame on both sides, which is where communication in human relationships so often goes sideways.
Yeah, because one person is interpreting it one way, one person is interpreting it a different way, and yeah. you can't, like, we keep going back to communication. You got to talk, man. You got to talk.
You do. You just got to talk, and without fear. You know, people are historically terrified of admitting what's really in their heart, and I think that at the heart of it, that's what went wrong between these two and this song, and what goes wrong in so many relationships that fail or struggle.
It's good for Kate to bring this out into the open, I think, because she, from the beginning, has been about expressing thoughts that people are afraid to talk about.
Yes, I think that's a huge piece of it. Nobody likes to look at these parts of human life because, let's face it, they're unpleasant, they're scary, and everyone likes to think that they're above it, and it can't happen to me. And, you know, Kate is not afraid of a taboo, and that's, you know, that every single album from the very first one, she's not afraid of a taboo, and it's one of the things I love most about her because it's raw and honest, and, you know, there's no hiding from the darker aspects of some of the best parts of life when you're dealing with Kate Bush.
And that the fact that she does it all in a story form, too, which is really, which is unusual. And you don't get a whole lot of, like, most people, when you think of a singer-songwriter, somebody who writes and sings their own music, they think, oh, the I in the song is you, the person standing up there singing, but that's not necessarily so with Kate Bush.
Right, and I think what's interesting about this song is, in this particular case, she went with a third-person omniscient, right? So she pulls back, and she's observing these characters with us. You know, we're all observing these characters from a bit of a distance, which is how people like to view these situations as separate. This isn't me. This is happening to them. And it's easy to be over here and watch and judge from a distance. But the thing about this particular song is Kate teaches a lesson, but she does it without being preachy. She does it without being judgmental because, again, while these people are not necessarily sympathetic, they are so relatable and these problems are so common. And, you know, there is no I in the story, but there is. You know,
yeah, the only I in the song, looking at the lyrics, is at the very end, he's shouted out, I'm all yours, babushka, babushka, yeah, yeah.
And it's probably the most personal point in the entire song, too, when he just throws himself into this and, you know, consequences be damned. He's all in. And that's the only time that it really becomes so personal. And that's when the whole thing shatters, you know, when you hear that breaking glass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's as soon as it becomes personal, as soon as he gives over and gives in and the whole thing comes to a head and just, you know, you hear that shattering glass. It's the breaking of tension. It's, you know, dishes smashing on the kitchen floor. You know, it's just so, so symbolic.
And now, how can we talk about the song Babushka and not talk about the famous video? But of course! So here's where we're going to get to talk about all the different parts of the video, a little bit of the history of that famous Babushka costume that she goes into in the chorus, and also just some interesting insights from all three guests about what this video means to them. But first, we're going to get to hear from Kate herself talking about how she did the video.
You do your own choreography. Did you do the choreography on the video clip of Babushka?
Yes, yes, I did. That's another thing that I enjoy, and I think probably why I can do it is because I actually write and create the songs.
Did you do the costumes as well?
Well, no, I didn't actually make them. I've got a fantastic costume lady called Pammy who comes around and we discuss what the character is going to be like. Because, again, this is the thing, once the song has been written, whoever is singing that song isn't necessarily me anymore, it becomes the character. And in the video, it's very much two people. It's the wife, and it's the wife really zapped up to be Babushka. And so we had to get the contrast. That's very important. And in the video, what I was trying to do was make the wife very bare, very black, very sinister and geometric, and using the double bass symbolically as the husband. So she's sort of manipulating him and pushing him away and being very cold. And in the choruses, she's just babushka, just completely free and wild and mad. And so it was really trying to get the contrast between the two characters, and using the double bass as the symbolic gesture of the husband. Yeah.
I mean, and I love the video for it too, just because there's a lot of performative alter ego stuff going on there. You've got her with the veil, and then you've got her with the sword, just fully freed, just letting herself loose. And that really resonates with me on a personal level as well. I just really like that idea that you can just have this reserved side of you, and then in a moment of passion, you can just poof, lift up the veil and really be yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
My absolute favorite part of that whole thing is the moment in the video where she's got the veil on. She's spinning with the bass around, and she spins the bass around. They've got some blue screen on the bass, and the other Kate is inside the bass, and she just gives the sword a little smooch. it's beautiful. It's just lovely and perfect, and it's just a perfect representation of what I'm going for here. The secret sword-wielding, fiery passion babushka inside us all is waiting to be free. It's really great, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a sound to it as well. I mean, I know the story that... I did watch that one documentary where it's basically like, Peter Gabriel showed her how to use a synthesizer, and she went wild with crashy glass noises.
Mm-hmm.
Which I adore, because, well, the 80s. You gotta love that sound. And it's 1980. It's just, so again, it's that liminal space. It's not quite the 70s. It's not quite the 80s. You're just right on the cusp of it. Mm-hmm. One foot in both worlds.
Oh, yeah.
One foot in both worlds, one foot in both roles between the veiled wife and the babushka. So it's like a dichotomy sort of thing going on, and I really like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that video, when she goes into the alter ego babushka, she looks so... She reminds me of somebody from an RPG or something like that. She's like, warrior woman. I'm coming out here, and I'm the fighter. Like, I don't know. I'm a level 5.
I got 20 strength, and I'm going to use a power attack.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm a level 5 warrior, and yeah. Because I'm also a D&D
the music nerd. The music nerd
chimed
in, and now the D&D nerd. That's me chiming in.
Oh,
there
and
you go.
And actually, I'm a bit of a D&D nerd, too. I have a group that I play with around here, and it's a lot of fun. I've really gotten into playing D&D.
Oh yeah. I'm a Pathfinder person myself, but I really, I can't wait to get back into it.
The video. What do you think of the video for the song?
Oh my god, it is so simplistic, but it just goes so well with everything. It's literally just Kate and a double bass and for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's in this black veil, and she's really sort of, I don't know if that was before or after someone told her, oh, babushka means like, it's like Russian for grandmother, because that's... Sort of with the black veil and the all black, that's kind of how my grandmother dresses, except obviously not as, you know, Kate-like, more old lady-like. But with the veil and all that, it just really, grandmother imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chorus comes in, and it is just, wow, you are just shocked by, like, just what you see. And it's just, oh my god, wow. Like, it's a stunning outfit. I love it. It is so... It's Kate-like.
Well, it's Kate. It's theatrical. She's like, okay, I'm going to dress as this, like, wildly sexy character. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have some interesting, I didn't even know about this till I started digging into this song and the video, that the basis for the costume that she wears as Babushka was inspired by an illustration from a British artist who was, his name was Chris Achilleos, I think is how you pronounce his name, Chris Achilleos. And he did a large number of illustrations for books and magazines in the fantasy and sword and sorcery genres. And, quote, instantly recognizable for his exquisitely rendered female figures, invariably beautiful, frequently belligerent, he became widely known amongst fans through several best-selling art collections that remain popular to the present day. His obvious delight in painting muscular female warriors who stared defiantly from the covers of countless publications contrasted at the time with the willowy, weak-limbed princesses favored by many of his contemporaries. Aside from the stunning and much-loved Elven Warrior, a 1983 wraparound jacket for Michael Moorcock's seminal high fantasy work, Elric at the End of Time, his most famous artistic production is Raven, Sword Mistress of Chaos, drawn for the cover of a 1979 book of the same name by Richard Kirk. However, in this particular case, the fame came incidentally through the Irish-British musician Kate Bush, who, along with the designer Pamela Keat, chose the illustration as a source of inspiration for the costume she wore in the music video of her 1980 hit Babushka.
I did not know that before I... Wow, but like I really felt that it was sort of like a Joan of Arc sort of inspiration that sort of drew that costume, because it's very like warrior-esque, and I really like it.
But it is. It's like, yeah. I'm big tough lady. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was digging into this song, and yeah, if you Google image Raven Sword Mistress of Chaos, you can see like, oh yeah, that's where they got it from, and then of course there's pictures of her in there too.
Yeah, Kate's impact.
Indeed. Now that the actual illustration, though, she's topless, but and obviously Kate was not topless.
Obviously. But
I can totally see where they got the outfit from. That is really cool.
Yeah. It's really, I don't know, it's just so shiny and shimmery and just so contrast to sort of the Babushka figure that you see dressed in black. And especially in their movements, it's just, it's like apples and oranges. You see the babushka as, well, I don't really know how to differentiate them. I'm going to call the one in black as Babushka, and then the one in gold is Kate, because she just, Kate is just really theatrical in my mind. So that's
of course.
Yes. So the babushka character is obviously, like, you can see her moving very reserved and sort of, like, in tune with the double bass. And then you see her as sort of Kate, as just, she is just giant motions, very theatrical, versus the little babushka's sort of tiny little movements with the little double bass. I say it's a giant thing, and it's just something that it's just, Kate's movements to me are always just so choreographed and just well planned. Especially since she was trained in, you know, mime. It's just, it's something that comes through in her videos. Is she very well, she can very well portray a character through her movements. And it's just outstanding to me how she can just do it so effortlessly in the cases of sort of the babushka dressed in black and babushka when she just goes out and tries to just catfish her husband.
The video is unbelievably powerful and sexy, of course. So that sells, you know, if you've seen, I'm sure you've seen the video, you know, it's so good for pop. But once you really listen to it and really start to break down the many pieces and the emotional aspects, it's just complicated.
Oh, yeah. It's, speaking of the video, my goodness, what a video. Like, yeah. It's up there, I think, with like Wuthering Heights and Man with the Child in His Eyes, and Wow is like just iconic her, like her telling a story and doing something very theatrical, like she usually does.
Right. Very theatrical. But, you know, it's interesting, I think, that you mentioned The Man with the Child in His Eyes and Wuthering Heights, because in both of those videos, it's just Kate with a black background, minimal effects, minimal props, and such power. And that's so true of Babushka as well. The main visual pieces really are that big old cello and that incredible, I mean, just stunningly, oh man, sublime costume, you know, but that's it. And otherwise it's just Kate and she's dancing and it's a, you know, no background. And it's just, it puts such focus on the content of the song and, you know, it brings it into such focus and it's impossible to look away, you know?
Oh yeah. Which, and watching the video, it's interesting to see her with the, I guess the cello or a contrabass or something like that, that I almost feel like that's kind of symbolizing the husband.
Yeah, I kind of got the same idea because you see Kate sort of dancing around it, prancing around it, you know, kind of shaking it at times. And you get a sense that he's just sort of... or that this instrument represents him as an instrument in this wife's, you know, plot. And
I think that's the story behind the title.
Oh yeah,
Babushka. And then when she changes into the sexy Babushka alter ego, that's supposed to be like, oh, this is the woman.
Yeah,
it's
Cammy's grandmother. I really want to be.
If you pronounce the
him again,
sounds slightly differently, more like Babushka. It means butterfly.
Ooh.
And apparently, it's also the name of a headdress.
Ah, okay.
And the impression I get is that she thought the title sounded cool, and then only later did she realize what it really meant and all that fun stuff. It was just something that stuck out to her.
That's a fun word to say.
It really is.
It's a second syllable, that babushka.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think, you know, the way it sounds like babushka makes me think of matrochka. I think they're called matrochka dolls.
Those little dolls that go into each other, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes me think, oh, yeah, matrochka, babushka. It's got that sort of sound, and it's a story that, you know, you open it up and there's still other little things, other little motivations and things with these characters.
Yeah, there you go. Again, the kissy sword lady hiding inside the reserved babushka lady.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting in the video that she's got, not only is she veiled, but also the bass that she's playing with makes me think of, oh yeah, she's got this scheme going on. She's playing her husband, and it's almost like she's playing him like an instrument, hence a bass.
Oh, that's great. And that really adds a new dimension to her babushka self being inside the bass, inside her husband's affections and hearts. Yeah, that's really good.
And it's almost like she's veiled because she's mourning the death of their relationship, perhaps.
Oh, that's good. That's real good.
That's how I interpret it. That's what I gotta say.
I mean, it's pretty good. It's valid. I like it. It's fun reading. Yeah, it just really resonates with me a lot because of that performative nature, secret selves hiding within you. It can be fun to have an alter ego, even if it destroys your marriage. That part maybe not so fun, but you know, who doesn't want to be the level 5 warrior swinging lady?
I know. I would want to be. Oh yeah,
sign me up.
I think it's really, really cool that Kate, when she's the kind of the embittered wife, that she's standing there with that big instrument, because it's like she's orchestrating this thing and she's playing her husband like it's an instrument, you know?
Oh my God, I never thought of it that way.
That's how I've always seen it. I'm like, oh yeah, that totally makes sense, because she's, you know, she's scheming and she's playing them. Like, yeah. Oh yeah.
That is so, I did not think of that. But that is just, oh my God.
And it's neat that it was a contrabass too, because most men's voices are they're usually very low. Then there you go.
Yeah, oh my God. Wow.
And maybe she's wearing the veil because you don't see her face, and she doesn't feel like to her husband that he really even completely sees her anymore. Oh, he's not paying attention to her or something like that. That's how I just thought of that, actually.
I always saw the veil as sort of like a mask of her true intentions, and sort of like, ooh, in the end, like the mourning phase of mourning a loss, in this case, the relationship, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's the character at the end who eventually has, like, the relationship kind of dissolves after this, because there's, you know, no trust between the two of them.
I mean, I even listened to the old demo of it, where it's just her and the piano and her song. That's really even quite nice, even without all the synthesizers and bialakas and whatnot.
She wanted to text her husband. She knew exactly what to do. She sent him scented letters. She was a delightful detective, just like his wife, but how she was before the tears, and how she was before the years flew by, and how she was when she was beautiful. She signs the letter, "All yours, Babushka, 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 yeah, yeah. All yours, Babushka, Babushka."
Well, I mean, that's how she started, basically. You know, it's just those chords and those keys.
Yeah, I know which one you mean. It's kind of, she's kind of got a little drum machine or going in the background, and some of the lyrics are slightly different. And it's not the entire song, but it's just enough that you can see, oh, okay, this is how she started. And then when you listen to the fully produced version, you realize, oh, that's where, okay, I can see where she got all that from. Because this was a released single, this meant that Kate Bush had to get out there and promote the album and the song, and boy did she promote this song. She performed it in France, she performed it on TV in the Netherlands and Germany, and even went to Venice for a special performance with Gary Hurst for a song festival called La Vela d'Oro. She performed this on two very distinctive specials that I got to talk about with Freezing Inferno. The first of those was for a Christmas TV show, not the Christmas special, but a different one. And then one for a Dr. Hook special where she was performing Two-Faced. When I talked with Freezing Inferno, he mentioned those as being his favorite performances of Babushka. And here's what we had to say about them.
Yes, speaking of performances, there are a fair few of them out there. I think I especially love the Christmas Babushka one, where it's literally just her miming out Babushka, and someone's projecting all this Christmas stuff on the blue screen behind her.
Oh, yeah.
it's got nothing to do with Christmas at all, beyond the fact that it's just Kate Bush standing in front of a green screen doing Babushka, and there's, like, Christmas cards behind her. But I'll be damned if I don't play it every holiday, just because why not?
Exactly.
It's good. And then there's another one, I don't remember the exact specifics of it, but she basically, she's got herself done up kind of like a Two-Face in Batman, and she's always facing one side of the camera on her reserve side, and then she flips right around, and you can see both halves, and one half's all wild when she gets to the chorus. That's a pretty good way of showing off that duality, performative theatricality sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And she really gives it her all. She really does. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
All right. Yes. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, no problem. Again, thanks for having me. And, you know, I look forward to doing it again in roughly 18 months.
Awesome. Woohoo. All right.
Well, good luck getting it all put together.
Thanks. And have a great day.
Great. Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk on the show today.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It was great. It was a good time.
And where can people find you online if they agree with you that Babushka is a really awesome song?
Well, you can hit up my Twitter space at twitter.com/freezinginferno, where you can hear me yell about video games, probably.
If you have a favorite Kate Bush song or even a couple of songs that you would love to talk about for a future episode, or you know something about this week's song that we didn't get to, you can contact me either on Twitter at StrangeKateCast. You can like my Facebook page, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast. And lastly, you can just go on ahead and email me, kbcast@linkmedia.com. That's link with an E. We will see everybody next week for my personal favorite song from Never Forever, the beautifully ethereal Delia's Song of Summer. See everybody next week.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.